Well, we just got our clearest sign yet that the U.S. dollar is about to lose its reserve currency status, the standing in the world by which all transactions, of course, are carried out in U.S. dollars. Well, we just got an amazing report over the weekend about the U.S. interest that is set to hit $1.6 trillion by the end of the year, making it the largest U.S. government outlay. Think about that. The United States government now spends more on the interest payments on the debt than anything else in their budget. More than all of the wars that the United States government funds around the world, which is over 9 right now. We just agreed to send an additional couple thousand pounds of ammunition and bombs to Israel. Of course, we are actively funding what's happening in Ukraine, then in Yemen, then in Syria, actively funding what's happening in Haiti. So just think about that for a second. The debt alone is one thing. The interest payments on that debt is where we are set to lose our reserve currency status. Now, this, according to Zero Hedge, which reported over the weekend, and I think they were really the first to cover this, and I'll even just sort of quote what they're saying. Several days ago, we were the first to point out two new striking developments on the dollar's crusade to lose reserve currency status. After hitting $1 trillion in late 2023, interest expense on the debt rose to a record $1.1 trillion, which we covered here on this show in late March. And while U.S. debt is now rising at a pace $1 trillion every 3 months, how is that sustainable? You know, if your family's future is tied to the U.S. dollar and you're worrying about, well, are we going to be in this sort of permanent inflationary period? The answer is yes. And of course, we heard from Jerome Powell just a few days ago admitting that they're throwing their hands up on inflation, that they're not going to fight it anymore. So this sort of persistent 5, 6, even 7, 8% inflation is going to be persistent in the United States, and there's nothing they're going to do about it because they can't. The only thing you can do, of course, is devalue the U.S. dollar, which is exactly what they're doing. So Zero Hedge goes on to say, U.S. interest expense is rising at just as a torrid $100 billion every 4 months. This interval will also shrink to 3 months very soon. So 4 months it takes to get there, it'll go down to 3 months, and then 2 months, and then 1 month. And the interest payment, so the U.S. debt is rising by $1 trillion every 3 months, and U.S. interest expense is rising by $100 billion every 4 months. I mean, just look at this graph. It's unbelievable. It didn't take long, as they point out, for the observation to make its way to Wall Street. And of course, Wall Street strategist Michael Hartnett, who wrote a great piece on this. And he said he put a whole, basically a report together over the past few days, which I've read, and it's unbelievable. He calls it the biggest picture. And he basically says the interest expense is the biggest motivation right now for Powell to try to cut rates and sort of constrain the surge in interest costs. That's the only way you can do it. That's why you're seeing them cut interest rates right now. You have Powell admits that they're going to be cutting three times this year. Why do you think that is? It's because of this. It's unsustainable. He says, the biggest picture, $1.1 trillion in interest payments on U.S. government debt over the past 12 months doubled since COVID. That trend in government spending, the big motivation for feds to cut rates is to constrain the surge in interest costs. Bear in the bonds market keeps us out of a recession, steeper yield curve, weaker U.S. dollar, and a higher commodities, gold, crypto, real estate. He says this right in his report. Higher commodities, gold, crypto, and of course, real estate. So when you have these commodities sitting there waiting as a hedge against this inflationary period, this is why you're seeing the price of gold surging. This is why you're seeing home builders excited to start building again. We saw February, the highest number of housing starts for years because of the demand for housing, the demand for a hedge against this runaway inflation, a demand for the collapsing U.S. dollar. This is unbelievable, guys. I mean, no one's talking about this. This is not on the front page news anywhere. How is it possible that this is where the United States has come to right now? How is it possible? Again, I go back to a time I remember Mr. Vogt's class in high school in the early 90s for me. And we were talking social studies, and we were talking about the U.S. debt. and how we sort of planned out how it was possible at that time to try to pay back the, I think it was one or maybe $2 trillion in debt at the time, roughly. Could be wrong. It might be three, but it was very low in the, it was in the trillions. And we were calculating out how long it would take to try to pay that back. Because of course, the discussion at the time was this under the Clinton administration and a Republican Congress, they managed to balance a budget, right? So we had a surplus. And the idea was all the talk about a lockbox. Remember Al Gore talking about his lockbox and where we're going to put this extra money? We want to put it in a lockbox and protect it. Of course, George W. Bush comes in and blows the whole thing up and that's all gone. So the idea was, oh, we now with this budget surplus could start to really pay down the debt. It would take us X number of years to pay it down and we could be out of debt. That's gone. That is absolutely gone. And now we're sitting at close to $34 trillion in debt, with debt payments alone over $1.6 trillion by the end of the year, just on the interest payments of the debt. Not even the debt, just the interest payments of the debt. Unbelievable. I put a whole report together. I've co-authored a special report on the era of high interest rates right now. I want you guys to download it. It's totally free. And if you're interested in trying to understand how can you possibly right now in this era of runaway interest rates get 8 to 12% returns without market risk, check out this report that I've co-authored. It's powerful. Just go to morrisinvest.com/interest, morrisinvest.com/interest. Grab this free report, and I encourage you to dive deeply into it. All right, today is our Q&A episode. We've got some great questions from all of our listeners. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail question here, talking about finance, talking about whatever's happening in the markets, real estate, gold, silver, credit, self-direction, anything you want to ask, please do. Just go to our website, morrisinvest.com. Click on the microphone icon on the right side of your screen, and we will attempt to answer it here on the show. So our first question today, let's listen in.
Hey, Clayton, this is Delonte in the Chicago area, one of your partners as well. Just wanted to talk about this Forbes article that came out in September of 2023. You've probably already seen it, maybe even discussed it on your show already, but it was written by Andrew DiPietro. And the title of it is The Most Overpriced Housing Markets of 2023. And lo and behold, Lubbock, Texas came up as the number one city in the country. And the article just kind of summarized very quickly states about Lubbock. It says that every home sold in the month of July was sold for above its asking price. And no other housing market experienced a rate of 100% of homes sold above asking price. So I thought, this was interesting because, one, this is your prime development area. And I've even worked with you in that area. And I just wanted to see what your thoughts were on that. And then, two, why should anyone continue to, rent out those homes in that area if in fact, you can gain major profit from selling over the asking price? So just wanted to get your thoughts on that. And let me know. Talk to you soon.
Well, thanks so much, Lante. I appreciate the great question. Really thoughtful question. And because, we're obviously Morris Invest and our team with Sidera Wealth, we actively build new construction properties in Lubbock, Texas. It's one of our markets that we identified many years ago as a high growth market. And we were absolutely right about that. So we look at the demographics of job growth, the different businesses, of course, that are coming to that area, the highways that are being built, right? The university systems and all of those things, right? We're also looking at, are we near big cities like a Houston or Austin or Dallas? And where are those people, those bed-in communities going to be moving out of, like stretching from those big cities out into new other areas, right? And so Lubbock, Texas for us has been, West Texas has been a hot spot for us. That's been one of our main focuses. It's a most landlord-friendly state in the country. And it's been a powerful growth market for us. I mean, I own properties, of course, in Lubbock, and I plan to continue to add more to my portfolio over the years. So, what this shows us first is that this is the growth and the power of appreciation in the Lubbock, Texas market, the demand. Okay, so to answer your question, yes, we're seeing the power, the growth of appreciation in those homes. Now, I like to say to me, obviously I want properties to appreciate in value, but that's not why I invest. I'm sure you've heard me talk about that here on the show many, many times. To me, appreciation is icing on the cake, right? And so if you invest, great, and the property appreciates in value, like most real estate does, of course, great. But I'm not going back to 2008, 2009. So to answer your sort of second question on investing, why wouldn't more people just sell them? And you could, right? I mean, it's, you know, your investment, you do whatever you want. When you work with us and you buy a property, you own it 100%. So if you wanted to sell it and go somewhere else with that money, you absolutely can. Of course, you're paying capital gains and you have to think about that, right? The tax implications of all of that. But 2008, 2009 was an era of people buying a home for $200,000 and they weren't holding it for rental. They were going to sell it 5 months later and make $30,000 on it in profit, right? That was the game back in 2007, 2008. And how many people got burned, of course, doing that? They overleveraged themselves, et cetera. So to me, I've always said gone is that era. Gone for me is the appreciation investing strategy. Just quick flipping and trying to make a quick buck. That's not what I do. I can't discourage you from doing it. You do you, of course. But to me, I look at appreciation and I look at prices as waves in an ocean. Okay. So, I always come back to a lunch that I had with my friend, and the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki. And he's got over 2,000 properties. And I talked with him about the values of those properties. And he said he didn't care. And that always stuck with me because I related to that. And I told him, I said the same thing. I said, I don't care. I don't know the values of my properties. I'm not monitoring that month to month, day to day. Why? Because for me, I'm going to hold them for the rest of my life. Now, I always encourage people to look at their portfolios and find out if there's a dog in your mix that you maybe want to unload. And, you know, you're always studying your portfolio. And yes, maybe there's a property, Delonte, that has exploded in value, okay? That now it doesn't really make sense from a rental perspective to maybe keep that property anymore because it's just appreciated so dramatically that the rent is not going to keep up with the value of that property. So then you decide, okay, maybe I'll sell it. I'll 1031 exchange those profits into a couple of other rental properties. And you think about that, right? But this is where you want to be analyzing your portfolio maybe every few months, every year, to see if there happens to be a property in that mix that you would want to unload, 1031 exchange those profits into some more properties. That's smart investing. But I remember Robert saying that. He said, I just don't care about the values of these properties because the prices will go up, the prices will go down, but they're all cash flowing. And that's all I care about. And that's, I guess, the way that I feel about it as well, is that I just care about the cash flow. But you ask a great point. Why wouldn't I want to sell that? Well, the point is that these properties in Lubbock, and I'll go right to my sales team's notes here. It's important, right from the horse's mouth from my sales team. It's important to note that the rental rates are keeping up with the purchase prices in these markets. So rental rates have been expanding as well as the appreciation and the prices. So again, if there was some big disparity between those and the rental rates weren't keeping up with the property prices, then that's when I might consider selling it, just making a huge profit. And maybe then rolling those profits, 1031, exchanging those into something else. But in the Lubbock market, no, the rental rates are keeping up with the prices of those properties. And whether, you choose to sell or rent is up to you, right? And your goals. And this data just shows that you have options in that. But great question. Thank you for that. And yeah, and again, I come back to this market, West Texas, and where we also invest in Missouri and where we're building properties there as some of the great areas where we can study that growth because of the demographics and people moving there, low crime, the diversity of jobs, and the massive growth that we're seeing there. So thank you. Thank you for that question. All right, our next question here comes to us from Darren.
Hi, Clayton. Thanks for what you do. My name is Darren. I'm from Idaho. I'm a disabled veteran. And I'm curious if I should use my VA benefits to acquire property. I can handle some payments, but just curious. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for your service, Darren, and sorry to hear that you're a disabled veteran. Thank you very much again for your service. I will say Well, first of all, the answer is yes. Okay. If I was a veteran and I had access to a VA loan, I would do whatever I could personally. Again, this is my choice, but whatever I could do personally to leverage a VA loan for investing. Now, remember, a VA loan, you can't use it for investment properties unless they've changed something that I don't know about. But, and there's a few books written on this by veterans, military members. We've actually had one individual here on the show. We'll link it up in the description below if you want to read his book on investing as a member of the military or a veteran. And check out his book. I believe his name is Michael, and it's been a few years, but it's a great interview and it's a great, great book, by the way. I've come back to the idea that if you could invest in a duplex or a triplex or a quadplex, you know, residential property where you live in one of the units, and you, again, under the, read his book, but I believe it's, you know, you have to show the intention of living in this property and, you know, you get your electricity bills set up and you move into that property. Now, do you have to live there for 30 years? No. But now you've got a VA loan with 0%, right? And you, especially in this weird inflationary environment right now, you move in, you've got a duplex, triplex, and you rent out the other side. You're paying 0% interest or 0% or 0% down. And you're able to rent out those other sides. And 6 months later, you know what? Darren might want to move. Well, now he's got that mortgage. He can move. He can rinse and repeat as many times as he wants. That's how he could build a fantastic portfolio. Again, read the fine print on your VA loans, but from what I've heard from veterans and we've interviewed here on the show, that's really it. You can rinse and repeat as many times as you want. You have to show intention of moving into the property. The idea, I think, is the intention part, from my understanding, I'm not a member of the military, is that things can happen, right? You could be buying a property with a VA loan and the intent to move into this property, and then suddenly you're deployed, right? So that's where the intention piece comes in. But now as a retired veteran, I think you're going to want to move into that property legally, make sure that everything's legal, and you're going to want to, you know, get all your bills set up in your name and all of that, and then renting out those other units. That's how you build wealth. That's how you build a portfolio. Now, do you stay there for 10 years? Totally up to you. I guess, you know, you could stay as long as you want. You bought the property, you moved in. Now you identified another property, you want to go and do the same thing. You can do this over and over again. And why shouldn't you? You're adding to America, right? We have a housing crisis in the United States. You're literally buying houses or even building new construction properties, and you're providing housing for Americans, on top of which, you know, the United States government sends out $900 billion a year for a defense budget. That's how much the United States government is spending. And if you listen to the beginning part of our show tonight, we talked all about the debt, the money that the government's just spending on the debt that it's spending. So yeah, take advantage of the system. You deserve it. Take advantage of it. Do it legally, of course, but read the fine print. But in my humble opinion, if I was a veteran and I had the ability to do a VA loan, I'd 100% be doing that. All right, next question. By the way, and I've encouraged my father-in-law to do the same. He's a veteran of Vietnam. I absolutely encouraged him to do that with a quadplex that he was buying. All right, our next question.
Hi, Clayton. Patricia from upstate New York. One more question. I know someone who owns a house free and clear. There's no debt on it. But the person has no source of income. How can the person get some of the value out of the house in order to help make ends meet? I'd appreciate your response to this, and I hope this provides you with at least a couple slices of bacon. Thank you so much for all that you do. Love your show. Love your wife. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Well, Patricia, thank you so much for the bacon. Yes, we sent out an email blast saying, hey, we were out of voicemails, I guess, with the holidays and stuff. A lot of people weren't leaving voicemails, so we asked you guys to save our bacon and drop some voicemails here. So thank you for that, Patricia, for saving our bacon. Look, I can't tell this person what to do with his or her finances, you know, with this house, but they own nothing on the house. Do they have available rooms to rent? Is it convertible to, you know, to be able to rent out this property to earn some extra cash flow, right? That's an opportunity to do an Airbnb perhaps and rent out a portion of the property and make some cash flow on that property. Okay. We have an affordable housing crisis in the United States. This is an option. Just throwing it out there. I'm not telling you how to convert your home or do anything like that, but it's up to you to do based on your local state laws, what you can do for rental properties. Okay. That's one piece. My friend Dan Krause down at Churchill Mortgage just actually reached out to me this week with a reverse mortgage program that they're working on. And based on the fact that you owe nothing on the property, or this person owns nothing on the property, they could use that equity. Now, I'm not saying a reverse mortgage is for her or him, but I would say, you know, look into it and run the numbers and see if it makes sense. I've never done a reverse mortgage. I don't, you know, I've heard some concerns about them being predatory. So make sure that that person does their own research on it. But if they're in a real pickle right now, they don't have funds and they do have this equity in this home, but they don't want to move. I think, again, look into it. Run the numbers yourself, look into the finer print and the details. And if it makes sense for you, then you, again, you do you. The other thing, of course, is to, you've got equity, leverage that equity, perhaps using a home equity line of credit that could allow this person to buy an investment property that could cash flow. So she or he has no cash flow coming in from that property they're living in. But what if they could get a home equity line of credit on that house, take that money, put it towards an actual income producing property, whether it's in Texas with us or some other spot or, you know, wherever. And then that property is now producing monthly cash flow. So now they have income coming in based because they're using the equity in their own home. But to me, I would say you've got equity in this home. To me, that's the number one source right now. Can you work with a local bank to get some equity out of this house in order for you to live and buy an income producing property to create cash flow? The last thing that I would want you to do is to buy, you know, is to get some sort of a loan on the property and not invest it, not use it to bring in additional cash flow. Just to take a chunk of change out of the house and now you're living off this chunk of change and you're not producing any additional cash flow. I just wouldn't like that. I just wouldn't like that. So that would be that's what I would say if this was a family member of mine, to look into how we can leverage that equity that you have in that property to create cash flow, to be able to buy income producing properties that are going to cash flow for you. Okay. And if you guys would like to leave us a voicemail question, come on over to our website, go to morrisinvest.com, click on the microphone icon and do that. Plus, please go and grab that free report on interest rates right now. Again, morrisinvest.com/interest. I hope you all will grab that report, and we will see you next time, everyone.